Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what is exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my good guests. And my guests today are Joel Sumbuk Boyce and Aldo Boyce, who are the co-founders of IQ. IQ is a unique tea company that sells high-quality Japanese tea based in the southern island of Kyushu. And if you live outside of Japan, it's not easy to find reasonably priced high-quality Japanese tea. Then I heard about IQ. And I ordered some tea from the website, and I had some wonderful new discoveries. And of course, there are other great Japanese tea companies, but I got particularly interested in IQ's focus on the terroir of Kyushu Island. So today we'll discuss how Joel and Aldo decided to move to Japan, even though they had a solid professional career in Switzerland, how they discovered the charm of Japanese tea, why you should try Japanese tea beyond matcha, the unique terroir of Kyushu Island, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Needs is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Joel Sumbuk Boyce and Aldo Boyce. Hello, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Akiko.
Hello, Akiko. It's very nice to be with you today. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So I really admire what you do. So I'm a big tea drinker now. So
Thank you.
So first of all, to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Well, so I was born in Geneva, Switzerland, but I have some Swedish origins through my mother. And I can say that ever since I was a child, we enjoyed really cooking at home, family meals. So I have wonderful memories of my parents cooking delicious meals from Switzerland, of course, you know, mashed potatoes or carrot cakes, but also from all over Europe, because we did a lot of road trips that ended up being a bit like food trips. And so we had a lot of pasta, veggie, olive oils, and of course, cheese at home. So that's what I ate as a kid and teenager.
So Aldo.
Yeah, well, I was born in Italy, in Pisa, Tuscany. But my father's side family is all from southern Italy in Calabria. So I was lucky enough because I could enjoy both type of Italian cuisine from the northern part and the southern part. And I really enjoyed that because then we moved to Switzerland. And for me, it was like there was lacking. Something was lacking. But basically in Italy, I could just enjoy all the recipe of my aunts in the family house in southern Italy, and lots of fish, meatballs. Every aunt would have its own salsa recipe. So Yeah, I can feel very lucky with that. And then later on, I would also enjoy the differences between the wines from southern part and northern part, or even in Switzerland. So quite a lot of variety. So that's good.
Wow, what a combination. You cover the best parts of Europe.
Yeah,
that's true.
Hey, but interesting. So, and then now you eat Japanese food. So your food world is very rich.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And in Kyushu, it's especially good.
Oh, yeah. It's the best. I think it's the best.
Well, actually, my father was from Kyushu, Kumamoto. And then, you know, food culture there was just different. And also, I mean, it's such a small country of Japan, but the diversity of food really can be seen, especially places like, you know, Kyushu. So I encourage everybody to visit Kyushu.
Totally. Please come now that we can all travel again. And Kyushu is off the beaten tracks, and it's really a place that everyone who loves Japan should visit one day.
Right. And the people relax and nice and sunny, and it's really, you can't miss it. So, all right. Yeah, I just going to say that October 11th, I think that Japan is totally open in terms of no COVID yes. restrictions. So finally. Right. So now we know where you're from, but both of you had a very well-established career before you started EQ. So could you tell us about your life before EQ?
Right. So there's a life when we were back in Switzerland, of course. And there's a life in Japan before we started EQ. So before we left for Japan, I was basically in the legal industry. So it's very far from the tea world and really not as fun and exciting and really not as good, of course. I graduated with a PhD from Geneva University, and then I got a Swiss bar degree. And after that, I was like, all right, I want to do something else with my life. And lucky me, my husband had also the same impression. So we built up a kind of project to try to do something in Japan. And our first years in Japan, first we were in Tokyo, in fact, I was still a bit in the academic world, but with Aldo, we had our own business already. And there I was a part-time consultant, and I did a lot of market researches for overseas exporters interested in Japanese food markets, but also for Japanese companies looking for solutions overseas. And so we already had, like I would say, our fingers in the food industry at that time.
Okay. So what about you, Aldo? Your life before EQ?
Yeah, it's a bit similar in the sense that I also had a former job in a private bank. I was in the IT sector, first as a web developer, and then IT security engineer and consultant. So also quite far from anything related to tea, but I had also a passion about Japan from long before, and especially by taking picture. Maybe Joel will tell you more about that when we first went to Japan. But yeah, basically we had this different job, quite boring if you ask me, in the sense that in Switzerland, yeah, you're either working in the bank industry or law industry, and we felt like we really need to do something else. And yeah, we had some kind of ideas to work in Japan, but nothing really that precise. We wanted to maybe to start something on the other way around by importing Italian food, which also helped us to get some experience in the import-export work and consulting. But yeah, so areas very far from the tea industry.
Right. Well, that's interesting, right? But I know a lot of people, like including a lot of Japanese listeners, they like Japan, but you actually went to Japan, moved to Japan since 2009. You've been in the country, and also you lived in Fukuoka. So, no, instead of Tokyo, you live in Fukuoka. So, what's the missing pieces of the puzzle?
It's a, well, it's a long story. I mean, coming here, even if 2009 is already 13 years ago, but our first connection with Japan started 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago, when we came for a honeymoon. And it was a very long and beautiful honeymoon because, you know, European vacations and a comfortable budget. So we were so privileged we could enjoy Japan with all freedoms and we could travel around. And, well, one of our very first places was Kyushu. And this is through Kyushu that we fell in love with Japan. And over the next years, we were attached or emotional about it. We came back several times. And, well, maybe Aldo will tell you a bit also after that, but, you know, it was like a seed, like a tree, a tea tree. A seed was planted. And at some point, we were like, you know, this is getting expensive coming here every year. Why don't we live here for a while? Let's try to build a project. I mean, you don't do this overnight. You have to build, to plan, to have a goal, right? So that was 2 years, I think 2 years long preparation. And the thing we didn't plan, of course, because life will never help, is that we didn't come here just the two of us. We came here with a 3 months old baby in July 2009 in Tokyo. So that was, of course, awesome, exciting, but also very scary. Being young parents away from everyone in a foreign country. But that's what we did. And we wanted to stay maybe between 1 and 3 years. I had connections with academic circles and so on. But of course, life happened again. And in this case, a very awful thing. And that was the Tohoku earthquake and Fukushima disaster. And we were in Tokyo.
In 2011.
Yeah. And we were in Tokyo on that day. So obviously, we were not like in the worst part, but it was already bad enough. And, you know, we had gone through Chernobyl as kids and you were like, you may have to make quick decisions. And we actually packed everything in 2 days and we moved to Fukuoka just to, you know, take a breather, figure out our chances, our options. And well, I would say those were like kind of make or break situation. But at the end, because we had friends here already and a little bit of business connections, and above all, we did not want to leave Japan. We were not done with what we had started. So we decided to start again and start from scratch, reset the whole thing. And we decided to build new routes here in Fukuoka because we fell in love with this city. I mean, you have the sea, you have the mountains, you have the food, the nature, and we're just like, this is, we have to try. And it's been, it's what, now 10 years? 11
right,
years?
Right. So the seeds, the first seeds are planted in 2020, the 20 years ago on your honeymoon.
Exactly.
So.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Yeah. So, but here's the thing. So now, what was your first encounter with Japanese tea and how did you like it? Because you are in a tea business, 100%. So we have to know that question's answers.
For me, actually, it's kind of strange maybe because it all started thanks to my father who you may guess had absolutely nothing to do with green tea in Japan, but he loved and he enjoyed watching old movies from Akira Kurosawa or Yasukiro Ozu, and we would watch them together. I really have fond memories of watching these old movies at night with him. And, you know, these were stories about sometimes samurais, but also a very casual situation in Tokyo during after war years and so on. And somehow this was the start, I think, from my interest in Japanese culture. But when you watch these movies, they are all, you know, these are old movies and the rhythm is quite slow and you have these long dialogues. And from time to time, you happen to have this maybe short moments where people would talk to each other, samurai would talk to each other in a very calm moment. And usually there would be tea and so on. And this really struck me somehow. And it really started something for me about Japan. And, you know, these zen-like moments before the battle or anything like that, or a very important decision to make about a job or so on. And these movies really stayed with me, and I would really look into the Japanese culture. And, of course, they would talk about Japanese green tea, how the samurai would drink green tea before the battle, and such things. And then I also worked, before working in the IT industry, I worked for a couple of years as an accountant in a library, a comics shop, where there were a lot of Japanese imports. And so I could also benefit from that and enjoy other aspects of Japanese culture. So this is a bit of the start of my passion about Japan. And later on, I remember when I was actually working in the banking industry, it was quite stressful, but I was, our apartment was quite near from the office where I worked. And I could come home to at lunch every day. And I would almost every day, before getting back to work, prepare myself a matcha very slowly, putting my old records and listening to the music and just have this moment, you know, very calm moment where I focus on doing the matcha and just focusing on my gestures, the taste of the matcha, all the tasting notes and so on. So even though I didn't know a lot about that, it was just about the moment, just this preparation, this break, as we'll maybe talk maybe later about, but this break and not thinking about anything else, just preparing the matcha, enjoying it, and yeah, that's I think how
interesting, right? Because like young boy, like, you know, adult sparkling eyes looking at the samurai drinking tea, and it was such an insightful, you know, like inspiration. Because I think it's, well, seriously, the samurai drank a lot of matcha for, you know, calmness, yeah, and focus. So it's just a really, it's not just a coincidence. That's a big part of the history too. And like you mentioned, you don't have to study tea ceremony. You can have that moment, even
absolutely,
listeners, if, you know, they want to drink by tea and drink, and your day is different if you have that moment. So yeah that's a big part of Japanese tea, not just the green leaves prepared very in delicious way. So what about you, Joel?
Oh, it's not as, I would say, inspiring as Aldo, I have to say, because my first encounters, it was also more like back in Switzerland, and it was, you know, with the very standard kind of blend tea they would serve in restaurants just to go along with your Japanese food. We had just a couple of sushi restaurants back in Geneva back then, and it was really expensive, really high-end restaurants. I mean, we're talking 20, 25 years ago, but the tea there was not really extraordinary. It was mostly powdered green tea, not even matcha, or simple hojicha. So I was like, yeah, why not? But at the time, I had really no epiphany or and even when we first came to Japan, at first it was also going, you know, to sushi trains or small restaurants, and I never could imagine the world that was behind it, because I simply did not know where to look. And it's the sad thing, I think, when you come to Japan, it's that, we will talk about that later, but the domestic industry is shrinking, and it's really hard to find places around town outside Kyoto, let's say that, and maybe Shizuoka, where you can ask for a cup of freshly brewed sencha. Matcha is, of course, very popular. But so as a tourist, when we came here at first, it wasn't that great or like eye-opening. This really came later for me.
Right. Well, it also depends on what kind of the quality of tea really matters.
Yeah.
And it's just a free, you know, like pre-made tea and served from, you know, the temperature maintained pot that doesn't have flavor. But once you make a fresh tea leaves yourself, it's a whole different beverage.
Exactly.
So, let's talk about Japanese tea. So, so they say that tea was originally brought to Japan from China, and most likely by monks who studied in Buddhism in China, and they're also analytical mission members to China around, I heard it's 8th or 9th century. So since then, Japanese people developed their own style of tea to create what we call Japanese tea. So what exactly is Japanese tea, and what is the difference from Chinese tea?
All right. So, yeah, it's so funny because, as we all know, it's the same plant, right? But then you realize that simply by the way we process it, we can create things that are totally different. And so I think in the minds of many people today, when you say Japanese tea, everyone thinks about matcha. Green tea would be matcha. And of course, it's much more than just matcha. So we like to always start with the fact that, all right, Japanese tea is more than just green tea, more than just matcha. But I would say the key point is that it is green, which means unfermented. It means that the oxidation process has been stopped very shortly after harvesting the leaves. And to do that in Japan, the process is steaming. And after you've steamed the leaves, you can go down many roads in terms of process, and you will get different kind of tea variations like sencha or tamairokucha or matcha if you grind the leaves into powder. So that's just and the general idea. But the fact is, you also find black tea in Japan, kocha, Japanese black tea that is fermented. Black tea is just amazing. It was a revelation when I first had high quality kocha. I couldn't believe what I was drinking. So I don't want to forget about Japanese black tea when we talk about Japanese tea in general. Mm. Having said that, just to explain the difference with Chinese tea, is that most types of teas in China are fermented, so would be sort of black teas if we want. But you do have Chinese green tea, and it's super popular in China. The big difference here is that they don't steam the leaves, they roast the leaves. So we don't get the same taste, I would say, taste signature. That's the main difference. Yeah.
Right. I have to say that I really like Chinese tea as well. So I drink them a lot. But whenever I drink Japanese green tea, I taste strong umami, as well as the contrast between intense sweetness and the bitterness, really perfectly balanced. And that I have to keep going back that, you know, the three flavors of umami, sweetness, and bitterness. And it's kind of addictive. And it's just also, I mean, it's the color is really just a steamed green, like, you know, boiled spinach, just the kind of idea of you freeze the color as well. So it's stunningly beautiful. And
I think, or you can talk about the health benefit, this which probably is a whole other story. But, you know, like theanine and EGCG, which I heard is, you know, it's unlike antioxidants. And I heard it could be 100 times more than Chinese green tea. So maybe processing keeps that antioxidants more lively. Right. So, yeah, but you mentioned there are many different kinds of Japanese tea. So let's talk about it. So what are the most popular types of Japanese tea in Japan?
I would say, of course, so in Japan now it's true that matcha is also getting a lot of traction. It's very trendy. But the thing is, in Japan, the Japanese green tea, as you drink it with, you know, your loose leaves and so on, is still seen as something, as an older drink for older people, because younger generation are just into the bottled tea and they don't really know all the differences of Japanese green tea. So whenever we serve Japanese green tea to some friends, even if they know a little bit about that, they quite quickly say, "Oh, but you know much more than us," and they are also like very surprised about what they can taste from their own, I mean, you know, countryside area and so on. And so I would say, after matcha, of course, the most popular is sencha, even though, as I told, it's just not really popular among younger people. There is also hojicha that people can enjoy because, it's quite similar. It has a taste similar to coffee, so it's also quite popular here, with hojicha latte, like matcha latte. Maybe less popular, but that has lately also found some, I would say, aficionados, is dento hon gyokuro, because it's very expensive and you have this incredible umami, and the taste is absolutely out of this world, and you can really you now have some specialty tea shops that only serve gyokuro in a traditional way, and very expensive one. So this is also something that is in some, I would say, maybe more in Tokyo than in smaller cities, but yes, dento hongyokuro is also getting some popularity into connoisseurs. I would say, for connoisseurs.
Right. So I grew up in Tokyo, and then so my father somehow did really like hojicha. It's a roasty type of tea, and then I think the majority of household never drink matcha all day because you're gonna be totally overly caffeinated. And matcha is not cheap at all. So matcha gyokuro, they're a special tea that you need occasion. And usually people drink sencha, which is beautiful green tea. Or some people, like my dad, he just had a particular preference to hojicha. And also genmaicha is a sweet nutty, you know, it's like a like rice cracker mixed in kind of tea. So there are misperceptions about, you know, everybody drinking matcha, like everybody eating sushi in Japan every day. Yeah. That's not true. That is not true at all. So, those are the idea of, I think listeners should know, you can drink tea all day, like drinking water, but to get the benefit of health also. And sencha, hojicha, I mean, the genmaicha, these are probably the most daily consumed types of tea. And then if you want to open up a more wallet than the gyokuro and the matcha, that's like high specialty tea. So I think it's important that people don't understand, like, you know, Japanese people eat sushi maybe once a month or every 2 months or something, and they don't eat sushi every day. It's the same idea of, how it should be consumed, because if you drink matcha all day, you're going to be in trouble. So anyways, So there are main tea production regions in Japan. And so can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so usually what you find information where the regions are like ranked in terms of yearly production. So there are a dozen of tea producing regions in Japan, but the six main regions are first Shizuoka. It's the largest tea production, that's for sure. It's close to Mount Fuji, so it's at the center of Japan, in Honshu, the main island. And you have a lot of sencha being produced there, usually for larger commercial uses. And the second region is Kagoshima in Kyushu. It's the southern prefecture of Kagoshima. And what we love about Kagoshima, besides the fact it's so beautiful, it's really, you weep. It's so beautiful, you want to weep sometimes. And wow. You have actually the ocean and you have a lot of active volcanoes. So you have a layer of ash covering the fields, the soil, on a very frequent basis. And it has, of course, an impact on the soil and on the quality, on the amazing quality of the sencha growing there. Yeah, it's mostly famous for its sencha. And the best known region inside Kagoshima is Chiran. And we've been working a lot with the Chiran area even before EQ. And we just love the tea they make there. The third prefecture would would be Mie Prefecture, not too far from Shizuoka and Kyoto, and they produce mostly Kabusecha, which is halfway between Sencha and Gyokuro, where you cover the leaves for about 2 weeks before harvest. So that's what they are specialized in. And then, of course, you have Kyoto with the Uji area. It's a very iconic area for tea in the mind of many foreigners, but also Japanese people. And it's super famous for its matcha. And then, we go back to the south and we find Fukuoka. And we find Yami, which is a smaller region inside Fukuoka. And there, they grow any kind of tea, but the specialty, what is so famous for, is Dento Hongyokuro, the tea that Aldo mentioned before. This is the king of green tea. It's like, it's champagne, it's caviar, and it has the price of champagne and caviar too. But it's just an amazing experience. It's a umami bomb, as we call that. And the sixth region would be Miyazaki, also southern Kyushu. It's celebrated for its sencha, but for me, it's the home of Kamairicha, which is a pan-fired green tea. And for this reason, it's really close to Chinese green tea. And it's just delicious. So that's, I would say, the six major regions in Japan.
Right, and it's like, which Wagyu beef is most famous from which area. It's like, it can be contentious, but you covered everything, I think. Yeah, so in general. But also, you really mentioned a very interesting thing that each region has different styles of tea, and the price ranging can be different. But I think, Kagoshima has a lot of quantity, and it's a diversity of price range too. So basically, listeners go to Japan or, like websites like yours, or you can have diversity. So you can choose your favorite type of tea at your favorite price point as well. So, yeah. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll discuss highly unique teas that you'd like to try beyond matcha and sencha. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Bicorin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Bicorin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table, so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit bicorin.com.
Hi, I would like to make a toast. Imagine yourself setting the table in mouth-watering colors and wares, wearing that beautiful apron that flows like a gown, curating a playlist that evokes a loose, limber atmosphere so you can dance while you cook your way into a world of play and mischief, extending a warm welcome to your guests. Dear listeners of Japan Eats, I am Mariana Velasquez, author of Colombiana, the cookbook, and I live by the ritual of the table. And that's why I created a line of hosting ware, Casa Velasquez, as an extension of my life, extolling that sense of home, retiring any critique of the moment, and fully embracing your cheeky, imperfect, unbridled self. Come with me to casavelasquez.co and reimagine your hosting essentials so we can set the tone for your table and home. Casa Velasquez is a mutual supporter of Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Joel Sandberg-Preuss and Aldo Preuss, who are co-founders for IQ. IQ is a unique tea company that sells high-quality Japanese tea based in southern island of Kyushu. So let's talk about IQ. So what is IQ and what is your mission?
That's a good question. Well, we have many missions, and a lot of still a lot of work to do because we have very nice project coming in. But IQ is really this, as I mentioned before, this moment we want to focus when we prepare the green tea, because actually IQ means one break. So having a break. And this is something that we really want to focus on. It's not only the taste of a tea, but everything that goes in between when you prepare it, when you choose your cups, and you need to make this break. So this is what we really want to share with our customers. But of course, what we want also to do is to really to create a bridge between local producers in Kyushu, very small producers sometimes, and who put so much energy in making exceptional green tea, but sometimes they struggle to actually market it, especially on the international market, also because it's another business. It's difficult. You need to have maybe a website to handle international payment and so on. And they simply don't have the energy, the resources to do that. So we try to make this bridge for them. And we put our platform at their disposal so they can sell their teas through our brand. And especially now that, after 2 years of COVID, that was very tough on many producers because they rely a lot on fairs to sell their tea. So when COVID struck, there were no more fairs. And so they had not so many means to sell it. Many of them, they just sell through mail order or fax orders, and this is not a joke. I mean, it's just you need to fax it, and so that was really tough. And this is where we try to really create this bridge and to get a lot of information about their tea. We make some tasting with tea instructor so that we get a lot of information, and then they rediscover their own tea. Some producer are like, okay, Ikkyu did some tea tasting, and then we go back to them. Oh, look, this is what your tea looks like from this kind of tea instructor, and so on. And so they're really like, oh, that's my tea. And they're surprised. And then, so this is a way we can help them. But I think we also want to show to the world that tea is a bit like wine, you know, or whiskey or cheese. You have real terroirs all around Japan with different taste because of the climate, soil, and of course human skills, and it creates some grand cru, like we say in French, that you cannot find anywhere else. So we want also to put this knowledge and to share it with our customers. But there is a reason for that, is that right now the local demand, the domestic demand is falling in Japan. And we need to create a bit more of interest for the younger generation about the green tea, like there was like with Japanese whiskey, you know. First it went very famous in foreign country, and then it goes back in Japan and it becomes also very famous in Japan. So we want to create this, I would say, same understanding about a product that is so rich, like green tea, to the domestic customers, but also international customers. So yeah, this is our missions.
Yeah, this is very important, right? Because, we had a guest, Daiki Tanaka of the Matcha. He also tries to revive the tea culture in a depopulated village. And I happen to have, you know, you two episodes later, but I think it's important to know that tea is such a precious tradition and it's being lost. So, yeah, I really think that what you're doing is very precious. And also, like you said, terroir. It's just a terroir, right? Because it's coming out of the soil, which is very different. And also your hands and human terroir is a big part of it. And they are aging. And you're supporting, you know, tea farmers who are just totally occupied with making tea and also not updated with technology like an internet, like email. Mm. And so, yeah, I think it's important. And so do you have any good example of tea farmers you work with?
We work with a dozen of people right now, and over there it's been like what, 5-6 years since we have really launched our project, and we've met all of them, and of course with COVID we could not go back to see many of them over the past 2 years, but we plan to make up on that. And at the top of my head, if I have to talk about a couple of people, I would mention, for example, Irie-san in Yame. He is one of the, I would say, the first in Kyushu to switch to organic tea farming. And this gentleman, he's in his early 70s now. He works with his son, so that's the good news. The next generation is there or working hard. But, you know, he had to go up in the mountains to create his own field, clear the field to make sure there would be no contamination. And the work this demand, I mean, it's just, I mean, all agricultural work is so hard all around the world. So you cannot really have a competition. But when you see firsthand what it means, and all year long, they have to weed out by hand without pesticides, anything, the field. This is just like, it's the vocation. So we have Irie-san and his son, and also close by, also in Yame, in Hoshinomura, we have this gentleman in his 40s, and he's a specialist of Dento Hongyokuro and Japanese white tea and kabusecha, Takaki-san. And he's also someone who is just so skilled and devoted. And we shared a lot of, I would say, joys and sadness because, you know, again, this is about crops. And so climate change, I have to say, impact also tea farmers in Japan. And there was like late episode of frosts or a winter too warm where the tea buds would start blooming. And then just behind that, frost. And overnight, just one day before harvest, Takaki-san lost half of his crops a few years ago. And it's just like you want to cry with him, but he just picked up and continued. And you're like, all right, how can we help? Another example is the Tsuru family in Saga, and they were the one to come to us 2 years ago. And again, it's a father and son of business, just the two of them. It's also organic farming, and it's also in very difficult to access area. You have to go by foot at the end. And every year we have, you know, now torrential rain with typhoons and a very odd rainy season. And every year they worry about their fields being like overrun by rivers and so on. But they keep on. And they came to us because the son was like, my dream is to sell my tea overseas, but I don't know how. How can we work together? And we're like, all right, let's do something together. And they are so kind. And we've met them so many times. And they even planted a tree for our son. And they told him, you know, you can come back every year and see this tree growing and it's for you. And we're like, oh my God. And then you feel this responsibility. I'm like, okay, I cannot fail. I have to go on. I cannot just give up and pack and leave. I have to go on. We are part of a system now, of a circle for many of those producers. And for people like Tsuru-san, I think we made an incredible impact. And this is so humbling because we're still so small. But when you realize that just a little bit already makes such a difference, you're like, oh, wow. And you want to continue that. Yes.
Right. So, I just want to talk about one tea I found on your website. It's called Shiraore. And it's reasonably priced. And when I was in Japan, as I said earlier, my father only had hojicha. And then occasionally my mom had sencha. So I didn't know anything about shiraore. And the shiraore basically is cookie that's like thin part, but the higher end. So, but then I went to see your website. There's this family who's making it in Nakayama, Kosuke Nakayama-san. And it's just a big story, like, oh, these guys are making it. And it just really means a lot to why this delicious. Of course, it's delicious by itself, but if you know who's making it, and it's lots of love in there. So, yeah, I think your website is really, I admire what you do. Because this is a... the interface with tea farmers, not just store. And I think they need the exposure. So,
Thank you. Anyway,
so maybe you can talk about shiraore because I really think this should be drunk more and it's reasonable. Yeah, and it feels good.
Yeah.
We love it.
We love it. I mean, the one we have is named Iki, and it's really incredible as a shiraore, and as you said, shiraore is the name of higher-end kukicha, which is stem tea. So you include stems and twigs and so on. And usually kukicha is maybe the lower end of this kind of tea, and then you have Karigane-cha, which is the Kyoto way of calling the shiraore. And in Kyushu, you say shiraore. That's right. And the difference is also the type of leaf that you use. Usually for the higher end, you use gokuro leaves. And the special thing about this tea, and maybe this is why you like it so much, is that because... you use the stems. This is where you have the most of L-theanine. And because all the theanine goes through the stems, but then when it reaches the leaves, the process of the photosynthesis will transform the theanine into catechins and antioxidants. So where you have the most of L-theanine is in the stems. And this is kind of, you know, this is the amino acid that makes you relax and feel good. So I really love this tea because, first of all, you can prepare it very easily, either hot or on cold brew. And you can drink that all day long because there is not so much caffeine or even absolutely almost none. I remember when I visited first Higashi Sonogi and Nakayama-san, we did some... we went there overnight and they would explain everything to us in the afternoon. And then we would take the breakfast with all the tea farmers and we were invited to the to take the breakfast to one of the tea farmers. And we were taking the breakfast and next to our table, there was a small table and the kids were there just before they would go to the kindergarten. And I saw they would drink something green and I said, but I mean, what are they drinking? And oh, this is green tea. But I said, but aren't they a bit too young to that? Oh, no. As soon as they can eat solid, they drink green tea and they drink shiraore because of the lack of caffeine. And that was also something quite, I mean, surprising for me. And this is so much part of the life. You know, they drink green tea all day long, really. And they are, that when you look at them, they are so genki, they are so, you know, that you can, they feel like they have 20 years less than they seem. They really look so great. And I was like, okay, this is another reason I want to drink so much more green tea. And yeah, shiraore is really incredible. The taste, the citrus notes, and it keeps you focused all day long. And yeah, I really like this one.
And I heard also the theanine is coming and also it's richer in umami and sweetness, sometimes absolutely more than leaves. So yeah. I think that's why I like it. So listeners, it's just shiraore is one name, but karigane is Kyoto style shiraore, some of the same. But also, it's called the kukicha. So if you see shiraore, karigane, kukicha, you know, it's something you should try, right?
Really.
So,
I agree. Right.
Okay, so and of course, there are so many others, but because of the time, we just kind of, we have so much to talk about. So let's talk about the industry. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, the Japanese tea industry has been shrinking domestically, and the industry is facing a big crisis. Like Japanese green tea production has declined solidly from 49,000 tons in 2004 to 41,000 tons in 2019. And also the reason why the Japanese people don't drink tea, of course, they are the bottled tea, like in plastic, and, you know, in supermarkets, of course, and ubiquitous Japanese convenience stores and famous vending machines. So you don't have to make leaf tea, which is sad because you're missing out something very flavorful. And on the other hand, Japanese tea consumption abroad has been solidly increasing. So I found the number. In 1993, only 305 tons of Japanese tea was exported. But now, I mean, 2021, the number reached to 6,179 tons. It's 20 times in only 28 years. And how many years have we been making tea in Japan? So that's crazy, right? So based on what's happening in the industry, how do you predict the direction of the Japanese tea industry?
We feel a bit worried about that because most of the sales are through the local consumption. It's domestic. And the problem is we have a population that is decreasing in Kyushu, they have some numbers where they expect that the population will decrease from 24% in 2050. So that's like a quarter of the population. And of course, every year we hear about tea farmers that stops doing green tea because it's so difficult. Maybe the sun doesn't want to take over, or there is no sun, or the population is decreasing. So it's fortunately the exports are doing better and better for every year. So this is very good news, but there is a challenge really to make the domestic consumption increase. That's I think what I'm a bit worried about, and that
I would like to add that of course it's great to see those numbers, the numbers you gave Akiko, but at the end this benefits only a handful of actors in the tea industry, the biggest one, and it will barely benefit the smaller producers, the one who make, like I would say, the most the teas with only, you know, the very small tea fields. They can never interest a big trading company. They cannot sell at a price that large buyers overseas will find interesting, not to mention the quantities. And we see this ourselves. We know we have like also a wholesale program, but we have to focus on only a handful of our teas if we want to meet the interest, the needs of, I would say, larger buyers, because the production cannot follow. It's just mathematics. So that's a bit worrying in the sense that we need also to support the smaller productions. Otherwise, you will have like just a couple of big players maybe buying leaves at very discounted sales from producers farmers who just make the rollies, aracha, and don't process it anymore. And so, of course, the matcha craze everywhere is great news, but what matcha, what level, what quality are we talking about? And if we want to help the local industry, the quality, what the teas that we celebrate with our website and the skills and the Grand Cru and the terroirs, we also need to help the smaller actors, I think. And that's what we strive to do, but we cannot just be the only one. I mean, it's not just a handful of foreigners in the office in Fukuoka who can change that. But so we want to raise awareness among tea lovers over the world. And it's great to have this opportunity today to talk with you that if they have the chance, the means, and the opportunity to help also the smaller producers, like smaller wine producers, like, you know, quality local production, then yes, it's a let's try to do this.
Right. Well, this reminds me of the change in the sake industry. So the sake industry took the same path, a declining consumption domestically, and then the overseas demand shot up thanks to the popularity of Japanese cuisine, and then the sake became more premium. That was the right focus, and the small producers can focus on quality rather than, you know, just try to compete with pet bottles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I really want to see that, you know, that you're doing a great job introducing amazing high quality producers, and I think this motivates other younger generation to be premium tea producer. So I think what you're doing is very, yeah, valuable. So what are your plans and dreams?
Joelle?
Hello? What?
So we want to of course, continue what you are doing right now and create more connection between customers and producers with many original projects. And of course, now that you can visit Japan again, it's a great thing to come and visit maybe the farmers and see how it works. There are some stay over that maybe will be able to be accessed again, making some green stay, homestay. And this is, if we can promote that, this is something that we will do. Of course, what we want to focus is to find new tea and create more content. So by visiting the producers again, taking pictures, see if they have something new to propose us. And maybe one of the dreams that we have is to maybe sometimes open a real shop to give the same kind of a tasting and learning experience that you can find in our online boutiques. So that would be really a great achievement. And basically to continue to create this bridge with many other farmers, as many as we can, and enjoying the tea that we select. And yeah, it has become our passion. So there is a lot to do and to enjoy ourselves with green tea.
Mm-hmm. I think the farmers looking at you, and they know you're enjoying and sharing the same passion. So I think that's why you've been so successful too.
Thank you. Hopefully.
Yes. So good luck. And then where can we find your updates online and on social media?
So, of course, feel free to visit us at eq-d.com. So EQ is IKKYU. We send out newsletters every week or so with news and introducing new products and also exclusive offers for our newsletter subscribers. And you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. This weekend, we just launched our new revamped online shop. So that was also a big project that took us some time to complete. So we're very happy to offer an even easier and more convenient experience for our visitors from all around the world. So have a look, and I hope you find the tea, the Kyushu tea that will match your new mood, your needs, and your tastes.
Right, lots to discover. So good luck, and thanks so much for joining us today, Chol and Aldo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for short topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@theheritageradionetwork.org or kikukatema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spenjan, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.